Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey everyone, welcome to Free For All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, we talk theology, dialogues, debates, rebuttals. But on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about, all different kinds of random tidbits of trivia and knowledge. And every now and then, you get a sneak peek, a window into the life of yours truly, Trent Horn. So today, I figure why not open the windows a bit in my own life and also comment a little bit about kind of a rite of passage growing up. And that would be your first jobs. So I wanted to talk today about the history of all of my old jobs, the jobs that I've had. I've been working at Catholic Answers since December of 2012. I remember when I got hired on, I thought, great, I'm only going to work for a few weeks and the world's going to end. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't really think that. But now it's coming up on having worked at Catholic Answers for 10 years. Wow, 10 years? Can you believe that? I cannot believe it. I mean, we've done the podcast now for, gosh, probably 3 or 4 years. I don't know. We've done obviously over 500 episodes, but time certainly does fly. But you really do learn when you go to a job, like your first day at work, you learn more there than you've learned at school or things like that. It's so different. That's why my mom got me out to get a job when I was 16 years old. She just took me to the mall and said, fill out some applications. Let's see what happens. Because she wanted me to learn the value of hard work, of reporting to a supervisor, of being tracked for clocking in and following directions. Jobs really teach you that. And so it's important. I think it's important for young people to have a job, at least a part-time job, so they can understand that aspect of real life. So let me take you on a whirlwind tour of my previous jobs. So my very first one, my mom took me out, went to the mall, I submitted applications, and the very first one was at Harkins Movie Theaters. They're the ones who called me back. And I really enjoyed working there. It was so fun because you wore our uniform. Because nowadays when I go to the movie theater, they are not trying at all. They usually wear like at AMC, I think like a red polo. Or I go to other movie theaters, you wear a black polo. But we went decked out to the nines. I wore a white long sleeve dress shirt, black slacks, suspenders, a blue bow tie, and a blue cummerbund. So I sometimes wore that outfit to winter formals when I was in high school, just because I thought it was hilarious. And my friends would come and they would come to see the movies and poke a little fun at me for being dressed up like the way that I was. But it was actually a lot of fun. I got free movie passes. I would go and take my friends. I remember I got to see like an advanced screening of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Before it actually came out in theaters, we got to see advanced screenings of movies even before they went out to the general public. So I got to take friends and do that. But man, oh man, was it hard. I was never skilled enough to end up in the box office. You had to be really good about managing your register in the concession stand. Like you couldn't, you had to make sure that all the money lined up with the souvenir cups and, you know, do all the inventory to make sure you were right and that you weren't inaccurate with the money. And, you know, I just was not careful enough, so they never trusted me to be in the box office selling tickets. Instead, more often than not, I would take tickets. I stood at the front and would tear tickets and people would go to their theater, to their seat. And I remember when I was taking tickets, because you stand there for 3 or 4 hours at a time, you got to do the tripod. Don't keep your feet together. Your legs will be killing you if you stand like that for long periods. You got to keep your feet about 18 inches apart. And so you form like a tripod and it distributes your weight easier. And I would just do that. I remember one time a woman, one of the rules also I had to enforce was no outside food or drink. A lady comes walking up. She's got a complete full salad from the food court. And it was hard to keep out outside food and drink because our movie theater was in the food court of the mall. So, you know, people are walking in, they got drinks, they got their food, their meals, and she had a full salad. And I said, oh, ma'am, you can't bring that meal into the theater. And she said, who's going to stop me? And I said to myself, not me. I make $5.15 an hour. Have fun. Nothing I'm going to get too worked up over. So I would do that. And then between the movies, when movies would get out, I was part of the cleaning crew. And I would go. And I think one time I was by myself and I was supposed to clean a 400-seat auditorium. And that, and they were like, clean it now. You got 5 minutes, get going. And that involved a lot of trash being pushed behind the seats. So dirty secret of the movie theaters. I think they've managed to, hopefully they've gotten a little bit better with that. But we had a manager, Mr. Windsor. My friends make fun of him. Windsor. Because he would go and he would like put on gloves and test the trash can lids to make sure we had wiped them down properly. And oh, goodness. But that was a lot of fun. Didn't last forever, though, because then I went on to my other job. So let me walk you through some of those. The next one I got was also in the mall. And so I decided to upgrade from Harkins Movie Theaters. And I worked at Macy's. And I sold women's shoes. I put in an application at Macy's because I wanted to upgrade a little from the movie theater. I wanted to make a little more money. Instead of making like $5.15 an hour, it was like, oh, cool, I can make $7 an hour. Whoop-de-doo. And I got hired at Macy's, and they put me in women's shoes. Now, women's shoes and cosmetics were the two departments that operated under royalties. So you got a base rate of like $7 an hour. But if you sold a certain amount, you got like 7%, I think, of what you sold every hour. So if I sold a $500 pair of boots, I made $35 right there on the spot when I would do that. And I was always like, hey, you want to look at these Via Spiga boots we got? They're great. When I worked at Macy's women's shoes, Uggs were a big thing, and we didn't have Uggs. And then women would always come in, do you have Uggs? And we didn't have Uggs. We had Rocket Dogs, which are not Uggs. And I would sometimes be cheeky and say, oh, we don't have Uggs. We have the original one from Norway called Uggs. You know, an Ugg? Would you like to try it? And then they said, yeah. And I said, I'm just kidding. These are called Rocket Dogs. And then I still lost the sale. And that was fun. I'll tell you what was weird about selling women's shoes, though. Nearly all of us in the department were young men. They would just hire young men to work in this department. And I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like women would come and have us just try, you know, bring out boxes of shoes for them. And I think they liked the attention a little bit. So we would do that. And I just felt bad after a while because I'd say things like, wow, that's a beautiful dress you just bought. You should really treat yourself and get these pair of shoes with it. You know, if they didn't do the Via Spiga boots, I'd send them over to Nine West. Those are nice. $50 pair, that'd be a nice commission. You know, I'll tell you this though, I was a salesperson, but I was not a hard sell. I didn't get as high sales numbers as the other associates, but I had the lowest rate of returns. Because if somebody returns a pair of shoes that you sell, you lose the commission. Because you could cheat the system, right? You could have your friends come buy all the Via Spiga boots, and then they return them a week later and thinking that you get to keep the commission. So they're smarter than that. You would lose your commission if you got a return. So I had very few returns. I didn't want to really pressure people when it came to this. I wanted to help them out. It got cutthroat though. Like sometimes you would show somebody and think you'd go back to them to help them, and another salesperson would say, "Would you like a petty, like a little sock to try on the shoes?" And they stole your sale. They just got right in there. So it would get kind of cutthroat amongst us. And then eventually, like, they wanted me to work a ton on Sundays, and I wanted to do youth ministry, so it just didn't work out, and so I had to move on from selling shoes. After that, I went and got a job at the community college that I was studying at, Scottsdale Community College, home of the Fighting Artichokes. My job there was I worked for the TV production company, Maricopa College Television. And I worked in the production truck. So we would film like meetings of board members and football games. Football games were a lot of fun. I sat in the truck. I was an engineer. So I would watch a football game, four cameras at a time, and turn the knobs furiously to correct the color. So that was me. I was a tech guy. I would lug cables, set up cameras, dial knobs in. And it was a lot of fun with the crew working at that. Sometimes, though, it was awful. I remember one time we had a 2:30 a.m. call time. We had to be at the studio at 2:30 a.m. to load the truck so that we'd be ready to shoot something that was starting at like 6 in the morning. It was terrible. I just didn't go to sleep that night because I was a regular college student I still stay up too late. My wife was like, "You're going to bed too late," but I'm just a nocturnal person. I'm a night owl. And so I would, I'd be up till, I'm up till midnight now still. It would be normal for me to be up till 3 or 4 in the morning anyways when I was in college. 2:30 call time, I just stayed up and I went and I shot everything. So there were times where I would, not sleep for like 36 hours sometimes in college. Nowadays, if I did that, I'd get hopelessly sick. So I would not enjoy that, that's for sure. But I enjoyed doing that. It taught me a lot about video production because I had done video production in high school and made videos. Hopefully I'll show those here on the YouTube channel pretty soon. Maybe around my 20th anniversary comes up next year. Maybe I'll show it to everybody then. And then working for the TV station, I learned more about editing and gear and lots of stuff like that. And that's really helped me as a podcaster. Now I do these videos, YouTube. I really am grateful for learning those skills and kind of those odds and end jobs that I was that I took part in. After that, I went to work. When I was done with college, I worked for Arizona Right to Life. I worked for the state Right to Life organization. He was the president, or he was the president. I don't know if he was the president when I started working there. But John Jakubczyk, he got me involved in the pro-life movement. His daughter asked me to go to prom, her prom. And then I met him, and he was the Right to Life president, and he took me under his wing, taught me what he knew. And so eventually then after college, I went and I worked for him. I don't know if I think he was involved. It wasn't the president, because I think it changed by then. But he was still very involved with the organization. And I was like a full-time employee. I would go and give talks around the diocese, around Phoenix, around the whole state, and do some political action, voting guides. And I was more into education. I wanted to teach people pro-life apologetics, and I loved it. But then that's when I felt the calling. During that time, I volunteered with Justice for All to do the pro-life outreach on college campuses. And I just saw with Justice for All, hey, this is where I could do full-time going to do the dialogues on campus. And I could see my role as an apologist growing in all of this, that the thing I wanted to do the most, not necessarily politics or things like that, I wanted to dialogue and even debate with people who were opposed to the truth. I wanted to help people learn how to defend their pro-life views, their Christian views. So as I was doing my Justice for All work, I also would teach people how to do Christian apologetics at the same time. And I would try that out on college campuses, and I would debate and dialogue with students. And so you see, everything was kind of forming me to what I'm doing today. I learned my technical skills, audio, video. I learned apologetics. I learned public speaking at Right to Life and at Justice for All. And then I met Miss Laura, and I fell in love. I was trying to think of a cheesy, I was made for loving you, baby. I don't know if Laura wants me to sing Kiss. I was trying to think what is a cheesy song that I could sing. Yeah, I think I'm more of an REO Speedwagon, Christopher Cross kind of guy, or Peter Cetera, Glory of Love. That is a great song. So the point is, I met Laura when I was doing JFA. And she went back to Albuquerque to finish nursing school. And so, I wanted to get to know her more. So I went there, worked for a pro-life organization there. But eventually I was trying to find, I'm a young man. I want to marry this young woman. I need a job. I want to provide for a family. And so providentially, a friend that I'd worked with for a long time when I was at Right to Life, Mike Phelan, who is the director of Marriage and Respect Life for the Diocese of Phoenix. He's a colleague. He worked at the diocese. I worked for Arizona Right to Life. We're familiar with each other. He's still there, actually. He's still doing Marriage and Respect Life for the diocese. And he told me that they were opening up a position, a full-time pro-life position in the Office of Marriage and Respect Life. It was pro-life, and you'd also help with marriage preparation for the diocese. And I interviewed, and I went and worked there. And that was also great to be involved more with the church, to work for Bishop Olmsted, to understand the elements in the diocese of Respect Life ministry. I would go to conferences for Respect Life leaders in various Catholic dioceses. I remember I went to one. We were talking with some of the leaders, like, hey, I wish there was a great Catholic pro-life book. And I said, maybe I should write one. They said, you would write a book? I'm like, yeah, why not? And that was the genesis for my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, that later came out probably about 5 years. Oh, actually, no, longer than that. That would have been like 6 or 7 years. No, Persuasive Pro-Life came out in 2014. It would have been like 3 years. 3 years after that pro-life conference when I worked for the diocese. And I told people, hey, I wish we had a good lay Catholic pro-life apologetic book we could give people. Persuasive Pro-Life. In fact, right now, I am working on the second edition to Persuasive Pro-Life. I'm expanding it, revising it, and making it so that actually in expanding it, I've condensed some sections so it'll be a little bit shorter, and we could move it more in bulk sales to get it out to schools, things like that. Super excited about that. And I worked at the diocese for about a year and a half, and loved it, enjoyed it. I remember my first time at Catholic Answers Live, when this is when I was interviewing for Catholic Answers Live, because I had gone, I took students as part of a diocesan mission trip to San Diego to attend a conference on marriage and to do pro-life outreach. While I was there, I visited Catholic Answers for a tour, and then I found out they were interested in hiring new people. And I said, hey, I think I could be a good fit here. And I showed them what I did. I showed them videos of me at Justice for All. So learning how to make video, that helped. That helped me to videotape myself on campus at Justice for All. And Tim Staples and the others could see, hey, this guy can actually handle himself in a debate dialogue setting. And I think that helped to push them over the line to say, we should really bring this guy to work for us. So God is good. He arranged everything providentially so I would acquire the right skills in a wide variety of fields to do what I'm doing now, what I love doing, to help people to know Jesus Christ, to know his church, to understand the moral law. I'm so grateful to God for all of that support. And I want to just give back to God and give back to you all. That's why I love doing this and want to serve and help others and do this podcast, write books. And if you can have fun while you're doing it, that's great too. But praise be to God for all of that. Thank you guys so much for letting me stroll down memory lane once again for you all. And you get a little more of an insight to how God has worked in my life. Maybe he's worked in your life too. Give thanks to God for the expressways and the speed bumps he's laid down in your life, because in the end, they all help us get where we need to be going. So thank you guys so much. And yeah, I just hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.